That's something that we, together with Trinket and SARS, manage to ensure that we don't transfer funds to CSL and NSF which were not actually collected. And there's a balancing act that we also managed to run. Now for the 2014 NDAs, that is, if we start now with the 2014-15 financial year, as you can see in the second bullet, that we actually have a very healthy growth in the department. Our annual average growth 6.8% if we exclude the direct charges on budget money, where we were last year on 34.3 billion, and we are moving to 42 billion in 2016-17, the third year of this NDAF. Our total allocation, 36.9 billion for this year, actually an increase of 2.5 billion on the 2013-14 allocation if you exclude our double charges, which gives a nominal increase of 7.4%. We'll focus on that a bit later. The direct charges in itself, that is then, as I indicated, the skill values for the CFO and the NSF, actually increased even more at approximately 9.5% annual average rate, where it was 12.3 billion in 2013-14 and it's going up to 16.1 billion in 2016-17. On the second bullet, the dominant department in our case is Program 3 University Education at the moment. That's approximately 83% of our total budget. When you look at the budget slides later, you will also see that very clearly. And because of the fact that the majority of Program 3 transfers to universities specifically, also then the result that transfer payments in the case of the department, due to the fact that we pay subsidies to universities, we pay subsidies to non-transfers to universities, we pay subsidies to the tiered colleges, we pay the conditional grants provinces. As a result, transfers form part of the biggest portion of the department, is close to 98% of the budget is in fact transfer payments that just go out to various institutions and entities. The result issue is that if you look at our normal departmental services, payments of salaries, the monitoring and evaluation that we must perform, just the normal operational costs that we have, after we send out all the transfers, all the conditional grants, all the earmarked funding, for example, our office accommodation amount, we only have 1.5% of the budget left to physically operate the department, which is actually very low. With reference to the transfers, the slide just provides you some indication of all the transfers that we are responsible for. We don't want to list each and every entity, otherwise we need quite a number of slides. But you can see then that apart from the small one, the single contribution of the department itself, we provide transfers to the Indian Resource of Africa Trilateral Commission, the Commonwealth of Learning, and in terms of Commonwealth of Learning, perhaps just indicate that that is actually the fee that we as government and country pay to the Commonwealth of Learning. So we may act as agents on behalf of the whole country. Then all our universities, all our feeder colleges, conditional grants to provinces at the moment until the partnership is finalized for the salary of feeder colleges. Our four public entities, NSFAS, SANFAS, CHN, QCTO, and then the skills levy, which is also included there. There's one specific transfer that is excluded, and that is the transfer for higher education in South Africa. Now, ESA is not really a public entity on our side, but we do transfer money to ESA for the higher education aid program. That is an average of approximately 7 million rand per year for the management of the higher education aid program. The first thing comes first. Project that they currently launched closely with the Minister and the Deputy Minister, which is a huge success at the moment. There's even international attraction, and I think the head of the program has been invited, in fact, to an international conference next week in Australia to come and present the program and the successes of the program. If you look at the next slide, we received additional funding on the immediate period over the next 3 years, relatively small within the current fiscal constraints. For the current financial year, we have 76.3 million extra. For 2015-16, 153.3 million. And then quite a big jump, 730.2 million in the third year. Now, the third year, because it looks so different, is because of an increased projection by Treasury, especially on the school's levy. For the first 2 years of this MTF, there is no additional levy collection projections by Treasury, so the amount remains stable, but in the third year, there is a jump of approximately 550 million. And that is where there is such a big jump in the additional allocations that you can see on the slide there. The other increases, mainly for salary increases in teacher colleges and in the department itself, you can see the numbers there. And there's also a substantial amount over the 3 years, 145 million of that increase over the 3 years, both for the piloting and rollout of the new student-centered model to administer the Lowe's universities at Miss France. Now, this one talking of levy remains one of the biggest growth items as well in the budget. Earlier mention was made of the 9 billion which you spoke about in terms of Miss France. And if you look at the slide, you'll see we talked about 6.2, 6.4 going up to 6.8 billion in 2016-17. And the difference, Mendes, is that what we refer there in the slide is the actual subsidy that we got. So those are the bursaries and those that we support from the department for universities, for teacher colleges, as well as just for the normal administration of the staff. However, there are additional funding, and that is where we get to the 9 billion, coming from the NSF, small portions from some theatres that provide bursary funding to the staff. We also have some of the institutions who ask ministers to manage bursaries on their behalf, where they actually transfer their bursary funding to ministers, and then the staff is actually doing the administration and management thereof. We also have recovery in the staff itself, the repayment of bursaries and loans, and those who, although still relatively small, already reached about 250 million per year, and those are invested back into the system and reallocated as new bursaries. Then the last bullet there, the function shift of the technical vocational and education training colleges, the TVET system to the department as well, and the adult education and training system is still in progress, but we already have some of the TVET college money with us. It was an agreement with Treasury that we will, from last year, 2013-14, be directly responsible for the payment of the subsidies to the colleges. That's no longer in the provincial education department. The commission grant that still pays to the provinces on the compensation of employee costs. So until the final function shift takes place, which we hope will be 1 April 2015, we will pay the subsidies and the provinces are still responsible for the salary payments. Now just to reflect that specifically, you can see that the college subsidies currently about 3.2 billion and it goes up to 3.5 billion in 2016-17. Conditional grant, further growth that is 2.6 billion, going up to 2.8, going up to 2.9 billion over the 3 years. Those monies, hopefully, will eventually come to us as soon as the function shift has been completed. If you look at the financial information for the program, as I indicated earlier, you can see that the university education grant is clearly the biggest, especially where we have the subsidies to universities and NSFAS, taking into account that that in itself is close to 30 billion rand per year. If you look at the current financial year, that is why the university education grants and so on. The VCE grants, program 4, the 6 billion for the current year, it's mainly then the subsidies to FTV colleges as well as the conditional grant payments. and the three smaller programs, Program 1 administration, Program 5 skills development with 110 million, and then our HRT program on 48 million. Just to indicate that Program 1, although it's just the overall management and administration of the program, we must also take into account that under that program we have quite a number of centralized services such as office accommodation, which is close to 40 million rand a year that needs to be paid. So that's why it looks so high, but it's because there are many centralized services that spoke from that program. The direct charges, you can see that they are small, as indicated earlier, and as you can see in total, if you add the direct charges, we sit with quite substantial amounts that we need to manage, which goes up to almost 60 billion by the year 2016-17. The same information in terms of the totals, check just for the various items in the department, and you recall that I indicated earlier the huge portion, the transfers and subsidies make up. You can see there in the third line, for the current financial year 2014-15, in the second column, 49.7 billion of the total 50.3 billion that actually goes for transfers and subsidies. Universities, our equity colleges, the CSLs are included now there in that total just for administrative purposes. If you look at key publications, we already spoke about that a bit earlier today, but we've listed some of the critical areas that the Health Department face currently and in the near future. We have definitely an acknowledgement of current fiscal constraints of government. The DD mentioned the discussions that we have with Treasury, and I must also indicate that those are not just between officials, it's between DGs. We even had a meeting where the Minister met with the Minister of Finance, so that we have clarity on the actual needs and what we can foresee in the future of the department. Now, there are numerous challenges in government, in the country, in terms of the fiscal constraints, and it has serious implications for the service delivery of the department. Some of the things that we mentioned there is that we are unable to meet the growth requirements within the post-school education training system in terms of enrollments, infrastructure development, infrastructure backlogs, increased operations and student support. It remains a challenge. It is not always easy to find everything. There are quite a lot of pressures and we do what we can with the current money that we have. There are also limitations on our operations. We take into consideration the capping of compensation of employees, and that makes it impossible for the department to roll out a new staffing establishment and to increase our regional presence. Currently we hardly have any regional presence, and that is really a challenge. The Minister specifically emphasized that earlier today as well. Institutional monitoring and evaluation is also limited. If you take into account the number of institutions that we have, Treasury admitted that we are the department with the most institution in government currently. If you go to 26 universities with different campuses, 50 LET or TVET colleges with campuses, we have 21 CMOs, we have our 5 other public entities which include TSF. There is no other government department with so many entities that they need to look after and is the most monitor and evaluate. And that makes it very difficult, especially in our Program 3, which is universities, and Program 4 for TVET. And that will obviously then even increase if we take into consideration that the adult education function comes over, hopefully also for my adult 2015, which even then includes those entities as well. Immediate pressures, if we look at the last two bullets, first, the National Autism Moderation Body, which is currently in operation through NSS and those supports, that does continue, but there is still no official voter trust provided for that body. And that is a high risk for us in the future. Immediate pressure also is the management of the consumption shift. There is lots of money that must go into that. there's lots of monitoring that must be done plus the structures that need to be established. We need to get space for all the kids in our farm, for example, which we don't have, and we did not receive at this point in time any additional resources for that. We are in constant discussion with Treasury, and we just hope we are successful. Then we also have cost implications for donation services, which is a high risk. Increased enrollments, especially on the TV side, has a direct impact on the increases of examination services. Although we get some additional money for subsidies for treated colleges, the funding for examination services remains stable. And that is a very difficult situation. We need to have environment within the department that take money from other services in order to fund examinations. Also, the development and the final rollout of the central application service that was already discussed earlier today as well, to address the issues of applying now and queuing, and all of that, no specific allocations have been made today. We do have some donor funding in the development of the systems and everything, but as soon as that service is up and running, we will have a serious limitation as we do not have funding for that in the moment. Chairperson, lastly, just to indicate that since our operations on 1 April 2010, we were fortunate enough to remain in budget. You can see there the history of our understanding over the first few years looks terrible. Perhaps just to clarify that the big amounts there, first year more than 20 million, the second year approximately 15 million, was due to the QCTO. Where we had allocations and they were not yet up and running. And we dealt with those monies as earmarked funds together with Treasury and agreed not to transfer or utilize those funds. There was shown an understanding for the first two financial years. So in 2030, only 3.7 million understanding and last year 1.9 million, which is 0.001% of our total funds. Main reasons was specific goods and services delivered, which should not yet be paid, and then outstanding claims from some examiners and moderators, and those are also earmarked funding, which we cannot utilize under the services. And today, we are fortunate enough to receive a qualifying order, and we hope that that can be made in the next few financial years. James, that's all on the financial front. DG, back to you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, when you listening to an elaborate presentation on the budget, I will now open for clarity scheme questions and a discussion on this one before you forget this very important and specific information. Professor Bozoli, thank you very much for a very clear and helpful presentation. Look for a few clarity questions. We all know that the Department of Basic Education is a hugely high proportion of the overall budget. Is the Department of Higher Education Training a similarly high proportion of the budget internationally speaking? Do you have international comparative figures on proportions of budget given to this kind of area? Secondly, what is the Commonwealth of Learning and do we really have to spend 1.something trillion on it? Thirdly, you mentioned infrastructure backlog. Do you have figures on the infrastructure backlog in universities and TVT? And the head office being, or central administration being very underfunded. That seems to be a serious problem. Can one cut slash from the CETA budget anymore to allow for cross-funding with numbers? Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Christian? Thank you. Just clarity on slide 11. You speak there of an increase, a nominal increase of 7.4%. If inflation is calculated, what is the real increase and how does it affect the different programs? Has being sort of negative or
you know, and how is that going to affect your mandate and how you execute your mandate? In other words, how are you going to turn every rand to reach sort of the goal that you want to achieve? Can I just ask one other matter, and that is, since you appear not to have, because of this large income surge, how do you balance the monetary and oversight function over these institutions with a discretionary allowance for those institutions that are spending knowledge? Do you incentivize somehow people and tertiary institutions and VSEPs who are really turning every rand around and making the most of it? Can you somehow incentivize additional funding, or don't you have such authority to do that? Thank you.
Any other questions, Mr. Bata and Professor?
Another reason my question would be, I could see that the DG and the team scale up very well in terms of the balance and the spread of the prices. Very few instances you find that within a period of 5 years that the department has been established and be able to balance it, or is an imbalance of stated assumptions, is that it's ambitious and ambitious to implement and to act on the priorities of the state. But I'm interested to know, in the provision that we see now escalating and going, in particular in the vocational education, how are they intending to sustain that? Because there will come a time again where somebody will come and say, let's turn the corner differently. Are they justified to say this is the way to go, balancing up with other areas? Because my worry is, we are going to grow this area with all expectations and be able to firmly entrench it with communities as a matter of principle that it is a good choice to go vocational education or vocational training. And then subsequent to that, 5 years later, the institution reached capacity. And you find that the department has been slowly ejected and is not able now to further reach into these institutions. These are the history with the University of Technology, or what it used to be technical. Once upon a time, a specific government promoted these institutions, and there was a time where they reached a ceiling and the figures were sent away. So I just want to know, what is the plan to make sure that once our youngsters are firmly convinced that this is the way to go, there is no barrier in the future?
Chair, thank you so much. I was just want to know how the department is trying to ensure that the money spent by universities, both traditional and universities of technology, or comprehensive universities, money that has been used to facilitate lecturers, professors, to engage extensively in research. It as a way of getting the A rating or the B rating. Because in most universities, our academics cannot deliver because they haven't reached that level. Just recently, with regard to dinner education, there are three universities that are ranked in good survey. It is Stellenbosch, followed by Wits, and then UCT. And with other universities, their qualifications are not up to that standard. Therefore, I think then the department will come in to ensure that these professors reach that level. And in terms of curriculum improvement, also would want to know identity within universities, universities of psychology, and these comparative universities, what it might be doing to ensure that the question of identity is an issue that is still present, I mean, hiding here.
Said that in light of all the room for improvement.
we wish that you can move from this to a team audit, and you know how to go about it. Address those methods of empathy, and submit a program, I mean your action plan to Auditor General, so that he can then, as you engage the Auditor General, can also assist in ensuring that you need to turn around, and then you move towards the team audit. I'd be happy if you can comment on that. Over to you, sir.
Oh, yeah, maybe before they say what's done. Member Barat would notice that some other questions are overlapping to other programs, not necessarily financial in nature, of which they will be further elaborated later on, especially when universities as well as teacher colleges are making presentations. But that's one, perhaps two issues. The one in relation to the question of the high quality and level of that in our institutions. Vis-à-vis former English institutions and other related institutions. I think what we sort of do in this department in trying to improve the research output throughout the system, we are encouraging and funding collaboration among institutions so that they are able to share experiences and support one another in regard to increasing research output. Secondly, Forte, for instance, and University of Vienna have actually come up quite well in increasing their research output through collaboration. I think rather than collaborating with FED and other institutions, doing quite well. The Fortress has put programs to support professors for research output, and they've actually increased and they've funded quite substantially the impact they are making in that regard. So what we are emphasizing and the approach is the support to capacitate institutions internally so that they are able to support these measures. And of course they will relate quite very much with the question of work ethics in each and every institution in discharging that particular responsibility. I thought perhaps it's important to clarify that it requires huge work, dedication, focus by each and every institution. But there are facilitations that we are doing as a department in order to increase on this level. Now, the other area, Honorable Member Chatis Raisi, how do you think we sustain growth in teacher colleges and make it the profession in society? Let's put it differently. Honourable members of the jury remember that in the 60s, artisans were highly valued in society and they were earning, as I said, more money than other professions. Now, along the line then, I think lower as a result, an average age of an artisan at the present moment is about 50 years of age. And it's a matter that all studies are indicating that our economy, for it to grow, it would require artisans, technicians, and technologists. Because those are the people in the name who would be able to easily get employment, or they would self-employ themselves. A bricklayer, for instance, wouldn't be able to enter. And the services they render are related to the development and growth of society. So long as they are human beings, you won't not need a bricklayer. You won't not need a plumber. You won't not need an electrician to do tuning, fixing. So it's quite important. Now, what then we have to safeguard in the process
what we are doing at the department, as well as establishing and pumping a lot of resources in the civic sector. For instance, we have established a consistent and solid framework for PIVET. I think the White Paper is elaborating on this, and there are quite a number of interventions that are seeking and strengthening the institutions themselves so that they are able to produce quality graduates in the city who become sought after by industry and by the economy as a whole. And also, it was important that we're improving the content of vocational education and training to be relevant and adapted to the needs of the economy on an ongoing basis. But most importantly, improving the quality of teaching and learning becomes quite critical. And in that process, we should ensure that we don't get trapped into a mission drift. It's one of the areas that we're addressing with the universities of technology at the moment. Because in the main, they would want to drift and become more of research institutions rather than producing the technical skills that are required. But we're addressing those issues with them in ensuring that there is no missing drift, as well as the diversification of program offerings in there. But one important thing in relation to the education system is the partnering between TVET colleges and the industry. That's the point that the minister was illustrating on. The effort that we're making there, because as long as the industry is distant from the activities of technical and vocational education and training, they become disconnected in terms of curriculum design and cohesion from what the industry would need. We want to close that gap so that there is a continuation of high demand of the skills as they are produced in a period system. That is the only way of sustaining it. Produce quality that would be sought after by the economy, by the country, and it takes off when it's home. Yeah. Maybe TNs would like to answer some financial questions.
Thank you, DC. Chair members, I think that the DC invited quite a number of the research on program activities as well, so I'm going to ask the program managers in the deal with the programs, but they also deal with those areas, such as the Commonwealth of Learning and some of the others. The issue on university subsidization the funding program came out very strongly. So those need to be addressed in various programs. However, I think one of the critical things that if one looks at the various questions in terms of finances, how do we balance books at the end of the day in the department? What do we do in the future? Will funding still be sustainable? How are we going to deal with that? Now, at the moment, GH, we can confirm apart from the treasury guidelines on cost containment, also the rather same treasury instructions on cost containment, the department also has their own cost containment measures in place. We apply that very strictly. If we don't, we will not be managed to balance our books every year. In addition to that, and specifically with the new energy crisis going forward, the department, as I indicated, one has serious discussions with Treasury. However, we have a shield discussion between management and the DG within the next 2 weeks on how can we actually try to reprioritize our budget to address specific shortfalls. Small example, the AIBH project of ESA that I mentioned earlier. That got quite limited capacity, but a critical success. The project needs to be rolled out to TVET colleges, but they don't have money to do that. Is there a way in which we can take the current 7 million and perhaps just double that to support ESA? But we need to get that 7 million. To go to Treasury and to Parliament to ask for 7 million is almost like ridiculous. But can we reprioritize? Can we somewhere take 7 million? and make sure that this program is also rolled out to youth colleges, for example. We seriously need to look at what we currently fund compared to what we need. You saw the slide of all the shortfalls that we have, all the risks that we have. How are we going to fund the career and cross services? How are we going to fund central education system? How are we going to fund the land in future? And we need to look at all those questions, and therefore, yes, we will have a very serious reprioritization exercise with all the branch managers to see how we can go forward. That's also just to indicate that within that exercise, it is not our first priority just to go and look at international trade. Christian is doing a lot of studies on that. It will appear that in some places we are all the underfunded economic at national, international norms. But we must also be acknowledge what Christian is doing, and that is a specific concern in terms of fiscal ability, fundability in the country. There are many needs everywhere. Whether it's the health sector, you know, sports sector, everywhere, and everywhere's got certain priorities. We must be thankful if one look at the current growth trend in budgets in government. I think our department might approximate to number 4 in terms of highest growth, mainly because of the additional funding for student bursaries and loans, the support from the SUS. We did receive substantial amounts to implement the two new universities, Mpumalanga and Sultan so far, in terms of infrastructure as well as operational costs. And we must be thankful for that. And those are hundreds of millions of rand that came into the system for those specific purposes. But the question now is how do we bring our side and how do we reprioritize? But we still can also be shown because certainly we can't reprioritize for everything at the moment. Gene, then, on terms of the audits, we can just acknowledge what you're saying is correct. Is indeed, I think, the minimal objective would be to at least maintain the status quo. Certainly, we would like to have a clean audit. It's not always possible. I think sometimes stamp will cost all that a bit. And I think the current strong emphasis by the IG is no longer just normal financial audit. That audit types are, that audit quite a number of areas in the department, that audit IT, and the strong emphasis currently to also the performance information. That is a big challenge. The department is not all there yet in terms of appropriate performance information reporting. It is some area to work on, and hopefully by one day we will definitely get a step closer.
On page 23 to page 25. of external teachers in Konami. We also have quarterly targets on teacher itself. Chairperson, let me start by saying that for the past 4 or 5 years, the focus of the program has been mainly on ensuring that the target is fully functional, is established, and is occurring as expected. And then we can say that we have a fully functional department now, and the focus is on improving efficiency in the operations of the department. The program consists in the main of communication, human resource management, your ICT, infrastructure management, and auxiliary services and admin support services. Chair, our presentation, we want to say that the focus for this year is to finalize the communication strategy of the department and also to strengthen and improve profiling of the programs of the department and the project in the public domain through a communication strategy. When we started in 2010, we inherited a data rate of 37%. Our priority for the end of this year is to have a data rate of 10%. I do want to mention, however, that currently we're sending a 8% data rate in the department, but it does fluctuate from time to time. We also want to ensure good governance through the institutionalization of a risk management strategy in the department by providing awareness and training sessions on risk management, as well as to develop the risk management strategy. And I want to say that since we are now almost at the end of quarter one, the strategy has been developed and approved already, and our focus currently is on the implementation of the strategy. We also want to complete the website improvement project, which is aimed at improving the current book and feel, as well as user friendliness. Let me also report that we launched this new website of the department in May, and our focus is now on improving content management as well as monitoring the website. The next priority is to improve efficiency by implementing the necessary IT infrastructure and systems. And here, Captain, we want to make reference to the corporate governance of ICT framework that was approved by the Minister of Public Service and Administration last year. We want to provide effective and efficient human resource learning and management services. Lastly, we also want to ensure that there is adherence to policies and standards on supply chain management services. Chair, earlier on, the Minister and the CFO also alluded to the question of partnership, which is the shifting of the employment of college employees to the Department of Education and Training. That is going to be also a priority for the branch because we are at the receiving end of the partnership. I do also want to mention that the white paper discussion also has implications on the organizational structure of the department, and we will be this year focusing on looking at how we can realign the structure of the department such that it is aligned to the imperatives of the white paper. The next slide looks at our targets for 2014-15. In regards to ICT, Captain, I want to say that last year we had 3 ICT governance framework components implemented by the end of the year, and the target for 2015 is to have implemented two of those ICT governance framework. And what we're talking about here, Captain, we're talking about the corporate governance of ICT framework as approved by the DPSA. We're talking of the ICT charters, we're talking of governance of ICT frameworks. Those 3 have already been approved by the department. The 2 that we want to focus on this year is to align the ICT strategy with the strategic planning processes of national treasury. So that is the first component. The second component relates to the ICT portfolio management framework. Next, we want to also make sure that there is better and improved program management
learning EXCO and the board, you know, member of the board, the head office is in Vancouver. And just by our nominee, I think in those meetings we'll cover this particular cost. But we also gain a lot of other leverage because Commonwealth of Learning is specializing in open access learning, and we gain through their partnerships with major companies and donor countries. So we get much more in terms of that particular issue. The next area that this branch is involved with is information. The information systems coordination. And here again, let's not confuse it with the ICT that Ms. Mbogo spoke about. She deals with the infrastructure, the planning, etc. The information systems coordination is to deal with information and statistics from our institutions. And the education management information systems deals with policy. Now, one of the priorities that's really most interesting is the issue of accurate data. We're quite far in terms of getting our data ducks in a row. Our aim, Jefferson, is to have a unit record of every individual that has passed through the post-school system. So, for example, you may be aware we've got a big database at SACWA. It's a national learning record database that is supposed to safeguard our records of our qualification. The second priority for 2014-15 is what the minister spoke about is the development of a federal planning mechanism. Supply and demand. Since we are the supply side, we run our institutions, we offer the programs, but it's very difficult to get the signals from people who require our business or require what we deliver. And so we're working very closely across government to ensure that the economic department, that industry, all of us able to provide strong and good signals, not guesswork, in regards to what is their demand, both in terms of the number of qualified people, but also in terms of the relevance of curriculum. So it has three prongs. We're cleaning up our own information systems. We're looking at information outside of the department. So the DD indicated we're working with the HSRC in regards to how we deal with those signals. And then is career development. Because I think career development is absolutely important, not only for planning, in individual development, but individual planning of people's lives. You just plan your life around that. Chairperson, the other areas that we deal with is also strategic planning. And my colleague is operating the notebook is the one that also ensures that the annual performance plan is submitted to Parliament in time, deal with all those particular issues. So when we come into the strategic plan, social inclusion and equity is another area, and here the Deputy Minister is driving a process where this year we're going to be, through the Ministerium, going to be drafting a framework for disability. It's been an area that's been neglected. The National Qualifications Framework that is set by the Quality Councils also fall within this particular draft to ensure that we have our qualification system up and running. I spoke about career development and open and distance learning. Children is one other area that I've been involved in, perhaps because of my sins. But it's the partnership, the actual partnership. And I think the context that I need to give in terms of some of the questions, and especially the inputs that the CFO has made, is that in 2000, when the president splits the whole Department of Education, the intention was not to move classes from provinces to national level. It was basically to just turn the old DOE with national functions in terms of the concurrency functions in terms of the constitution. However, when the minister, the new minister split, and when our minister met with the MEC, they were actually shocked because they must have understood, I suppose, that the DOE and the Department of Higher Education and Training, therefore entity colleges and adult education had fallen within this department. Not so, because the constitution is solid, and those functions are still a concurrent functions. And if today something happens in a in a bunch of, in a qualification center, the embassies of education constitutionally are accountable and responsible. The problem is that I don't think government has any experience to be able to shift functions from one sphere of government to the other. And I think this is where the PG and the Minister was indicating that we have the function, this Parliament has given our Minister responsibility in regards to, for example, the appointment of principals, the appointment of governors. But the issue is there's not a single sense to be able to drive that particular process. And Chairperson, I think some of the assistance that this committee can give, since last year, of course, this committee has more power over the money dollars. It's no longer a bureaucratic process. And we have to begin to look at this, because that's the same as what for us. We're getting 38,000 people. From the 1,000 that we employ now, we're going to be employing 38,000 people. We have to manage them on the 1st of April, Chairperson. Just given the scale, we're going to have hiring candidates of 38,000 people. We don't have a single cent this year. We don't know where to get our accommodation. And so therefore, Chairperson, I think the support of the Portfolio Committee in regards to the partnership is ideal. We accept that it needs to be part of the whole school system. Chairperson, I spoke about the FQM, and so I'm not going to go into too much detail. I spoke about international relations on slide 27, I spoke about inclusion and equity and career management. These are the targets, what we performed in 2013-14, and what the Auditor General is going to focus on in terms of ensuring the release of the targets. It's about getting our integration of data correct in 2028. And on slide number 29, we deal with the career development services, which I spoke about. In terms of career development, Cabinet has given the Minister the responsibility to coordinate policy on career development. We have nothing in government, no single Minister takes responsibility for it. Either we've got lots of gaps, or we've got lots of overlaps. Everybody running to deal with career development. So the Minister is going to develop policy. So that we can also identify the role of basic education, the role of the Department of Labour, the role of the National Youth Development Agency, the role of the economic department, the role of the Department of Higher Education and Training, the role of provinces, and we have to look at the whole value chain around career development, from table to the grade. I'm not sure what career we're looking by after the grade, but to be able to look at career development. This includes walking centers for counseling, because there are so many opportunities, Chairperson, that our young people just don't know that they exist. As somebody was saying, we only thought about being a teacher, a doctor, or a nurse, or a lawyer with the occupations. But we have something like over 1,000 occupations. So we're going to be putting a lot of effort into that. Fortunately, Chairperson, we are funded for the next 3 years with donor funding for a lot of these things. You know that this grant is a very small one, but at least we have the donor funding. So, Chairperson, and just in terms of the questions, there was a question from one member around course studying and work integrated learning. Now, as part of our remarks mechanism, we are looking at course studies. In other words, studying groups of students that come to our system and they go through life itself. And where they find themselves, are getting employed in the field of qualifications that they have, are they being relevant, are they switching professions. But also we instituted a registration system, Chairperson, to register work students who have qualifications but who require work experience. Now this is not an operational system where our University of Technology and TVET are required to ensure students that are in the pipeline are provided with work experience. We're going to be working in a system where we're going to be open to the public for those that have missed out on that to see whether we can match companies to that. That was one of the things. There was another question from an honorable member in regards to professional bodies and gatekeeping. Through the NQF, we have asked SECWA to really begin to get professional boys together to ensure that they they do not get it keeping it out. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the true presentation. Indeed, they were insightful. I will now invite a member of the committee to interact with the true presentation. Professor Kuliza and Professor Ozoli. And then Mr. Suela, who else would like to talk on this? I see Mr. Chishonga. And yeah, so far.
Yes.
Another week will be the last one, Mr.
Thank you, Chair. Chair. I see on slide page 14 of our document, you indicate 100% of institutional data capture should have been integrated by the editors of my page 14. The question would be, was the target met? And when you look on the other side of the slide, you can see it says 25 higher education institutions. On the left side, it was 10-3. How do we correlate the data? 10-3 and 5? Okay. So, one target plus? That question.
Thank you for your presentation. Just one question on the understanding about 38,000 people having to come onto your books and you don't have the mechanism to put them onto your books. Is that not a massive disaster in the making? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Following on the risk of the money going to the goods it's not supposed to, in particular corruption, how do you manage it? I mean, I haven't had a lot of corruption issues in education. How do you manage this risk?
It is said that there should be a reduction of the vacancy rate on other posting about 10%. And then my question would be, what is the percentage of the vacancy rate in the department for this current financial year? Thank you.
I agree.
In terms of the ratio that has been covered, the out of students, 3 to 1, 1 from university, 3 from technical, vocational, and community college, ultimately. I just wanted to repeat the target time for it. When are we hoping to achieve that? And secondly, do we have the capacity to start up doing vocational, technical, and lastly, have we gone out to the public itself to get a buy-in? Because remember, there are all kinds of ideas. Something you are really worthy if you go to university. And the stigma has the issue of vocational, and they think you only go to vocational because you are not able to go to university. I mean, even those that are good to ones who are there, should go to vocational. So have we made public appearance and spoken on radio, TV about all these protests?
Thank you very much for my on this period. Jefferson, the issue of 38,000 from the reset that should be administered and that should come onto the system.
there's another system also that is the accurate data on skill, the supply and demand. If we go to the location, because the APP speaks of it must come onto a single system by 2014-2015. Now, I suppose it is the end of the financial year. How far is there any progress? Are we 20% there? Are we 50% there? Or is there no system as yet?
Okay, from my side, Ms. Mbongo, I would like to know if you have an adopted organogram. This one goes from your vacancy rate, where you want to bring it down to 10%. But also, those vacancies that you alluded to, are they, at what level are they? And then, also to check with you, when you spoke about the risk management strategy that you have adopted, do you have the implementation plan? Do you have a manager to make sure that the actual implementation plan? Okay, on slide number 22, we're talking about policies and standards of supply chain management services. I know that it is expected that policies be reviewed on an annual basis. I'd like to know if the policies you are looking to hear are reviewed. But also, I have information that also the responsibility for policy development has been transferred to the department. Now, where is that in your APD? Policy development, what is the responsibility that you must carry it out? When you spoke about the 4 months on your recruitment, it is actually prescribed that the recruitment cycle is 4 months, meaning that you want to tell everything in there. But the way you put it as if you are rejoining it for 4 months, it is prescribed. And when we're talking about performance, the balance between performance and compliance, we are expected to comply with the 4 months of the recruitment process. All right. Again, I am aware that the agricultural colleges are now also shifted to the Department of Higher Education and Training. I don't know whether this one would have relevance to you, but what are the transitional arrangements in place? Because I know that there will be a shift of the TVET to Higher Education and Training, and we're talking about financial constraints. But is this other added responsibility? What are the transitional arrangements and do we have money here to implement? Because if you take over this lending money, you must implement. Lastly, does the department have pending labor related cases? And what is the turnaround time to deal with those cases? And what are the nature of the case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. The question from the Honourable Members on the 101 is, two members asked, did we achieve the estimated performance for 2013-40 in regards to institutional data, double integration? The answer is yes. That is for 50 colleges and 23 universities and 21 theaters. The difference between the two is the difference between the 23 and the 25 is our flagship University of Mpumalanga and the Solati University. And so next year we probably go to 26 with the University of Health and the Allied Sciences. The question from the Honourable Member around the 38,000, there are currently about 90,000 employees in health education and training centers. cases, these are not full-time employees, but like a contract position. So they head out education. Something like 3,500 education centers. Then we have the similar number, 19,000 employed at colleges. That means they're employed in their colleges are who are still being managed on first hour. So that's not very difficult because they're on the state payroll system. Already not on employees. So that is the reality for 1,038,000. The issue is about capacity. I think we heard from the minister in the DG give out one down around this particular issue of how the problem is we're dealing with sphere of government, we're dealing with cooperation between levels of government. We could have mitigated that a little easily if we were not cooperative government spheres. We could easily have mitigated it again. But unfortunately, you have to work through those through these things. Generally, the issue is the constitutional obligation is still waiting as we indicated. The constitution hasn't been changed. And I think the minister and the DG we're working very hard. We can't get into this budget cycle. But at the point at which the minister may have gone to the president and indicated to the president it's not possible to manage these 38,000 people without having time. So therefore, we urge it also through the powers that this committee has in terms of the appropriation to begin to ask those hard questions to our other colleagues in regards to how, you know, what progress around that. I think the company also has powers to, in terms of the money bills, to implement recommendations when you do see that some of us are particularly battering. But at the end of the day, if things don't come right to the budgeting process, I think our last case is going to be, we're talking about 14-15 budget. So even a current division of revenue bill that is before the House, just was that question to say that why are we managing with 1.5% of the budget? We've even tried asking National Treasury that if it's a conditional grant of 6 billion rand, clearly that we as a department require some funds to monitor that. And Treasury asked us through some legal particular process. Our legal opinion is that this House and this Parliament has asked our Minister to begin to take over those particular functions by amending the FPG Act. And that is this House that really needs to decide how this fund needs to be allocated. So we're hoping. But at the end of the day, changes in the budget process failed. Except that the minister will have to speak to the president to delay the process. In regards to the, I think about just on the end council policy chair, DG or university will take that.
We did encounter some talented persons here
even that we get to the concern as a minister of concerns and administration, is that the children will be not viewed that we should quite correct that the current representative of the department will not enable the department to implement the organic amendment team. So it has just been referred back to the department for us to work within the existing compensation budget. And that is an exercise that currently erupting upon. But I also think the person that the white paper also brings about, you know, new indications now on the manner in which the factory is restructured, also on issues of government and management, which will require the minister to review the organogram towards the alignment of the structure with a new strategy going away, which has to be, you know, effective from 2016. So the question is, there is an interim structure approved, there is an approved organogram by the minister. However, the Minister of Transportation Administration has not consented to it due to the financial policy of the department. There was a question around the vacancy rate, in the current post establishment of the department, we have a total of 1,039 posts. 967 of them are filled, and we have 72 vacancies, which gives us a vacancy rate of around 8%. But as I indicated earlier on, it does fluctuate. And I'm going to give an example. When the process of taking over the functions of career development services from SAPA, and there are 55 additional posts that we now have to add on the track of the department and fill them. So when we come back, we need to present our total report, we might say to you the vacancy rate is 10% and no longer 8% because of those fluctuations. So as it is now, we've actually advertised those 55 posts for the career development services, which will now be added on the 1,039 posts in the department. There is a question around the management strategy. Yes, we do have the implementation plan. We are actually currently now doing the risk assessment at an operational level with the various components of it to implement the implementation plan. There is the manager for risk management within the office of the DG for corporate services and the executive director level, and that's the strategy driving the process. On supply chain management, I'm sure the CFO will assist us, but I am aware that last year we did review our supply chain management policies, so it is aligned with the gender regulations. So there has been that review. In regards to our policy, the department is driving the policy development process in regards to your HR, finance, logistical services, and support in doing this. But we're also taking that process further to see the colleagues as well, so that there is an alignment of our policies throughout the department and our institution in everything on that process as we speak. On the question of the filling of vacancies, the emphasis was that yes, indeed, the department is compliant with the 4 months period that has been prescribed, you know, by DPSA. And we are coming from a background check where it used to take us more than 4 months. It used to take us on average around 7 months to fill the vacancy. And what we are trying to say is that we are now striving towards ensuring that not one, not two, but all groups that we are discussing the department are still within 4 months. We don't want to talk about average. We want to talk about the extra code that we advertise that we can take them at 4 months to fill them. On the relationship, the precise period is 90 days to deal with the labor relations cases. We internally in the department, we do manage to resolve all our cases within 90 days. We may have one or two cases that may not serve within the 90-day period, but for a number of reasons, including the availability of key witnesses in dealing with such cases, or people to then change signals, and so on. Captain, unfortunately, I will not be able to give the speaker, but we can send the report this afternoon to you to give you the actual cases and the number of things that are grievances, and whether the issues that currently managing. Can I also say that with the partnership process, the department is also has also taken over more than 400 cases from SOT colleagues. And we have set up a project unit that is working towards ensuring that come 1 April 2014, the department does not have any such backlog of cases from SOT colleagues. So it's really more than 400 cases that we deal with. Some are old cases, but we are cleaning up the system so that we inherit, we don't inherit any cases. In regards to agricultural colleges, I'm sure the chief director and the DG for universities bench are going to deal with that question. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, the ratio. 1:4 over a period of 4 years we've reduced that ratio quite tremendously. One up to 1:1.2 at a present moment. So it has gone down quite tremendously, and think we are going to sustain that ratio between the number of university students as well as the number of students who are enrolled in TVET colleges. So there is much more rapid growth at TVET college sector to make up for what has developed over time at university sector. So the ratio now is 1:1.2, and the thing we are going to step up is quite soon. A good college is we give you that because this is a that is program change if you are allowed.
That we've noted all the questions, or are there follow-up questions from Honourable Members? Shall we then move on to program 3, which is university education?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I would like to start saying that the universities have a unique planning mechanism in such a way that we're using the leverages that are given to us by our Higher Education Act. And those are the three levers of planning, funding, and policy. Now, planning and funding is falling directly within our domain, while quality are, as you are aware, are dedicated to CHD, where we have an oversight function of. Now, we're using the planning as a steering mechanism and the funding as a support. So, in other words, if we are saying we're supporting the institutions, we have strategized already to the extent that the planning provides the platform and therefore we are supporting from our funding envelope. Having said that, we are adhering to the one paper that we are planning with two main streams with regards to our planning. So planning is the step of our students, that's first and foremost, and always trying to improve the quality of teaching and learning within the environment and therefore improving the academic performance of our students in the system. And parallel to that is providing access with success to our students as well as to enter higher education. So we use different mechanisms to achieve that. And the first kind of funding envelope that we are using is the foundation provisioning, which is totally focused on academic performance, not allowing or providing access to students that don't meet the minimum requirements, but those students that do meet the minimum requirements are provided with additional support to enable them to improve their academic performance. The teaching and development program also are specific to improve the teaching and learning environment from different perspectives. From students' alike perspective as well as from a lecturer perspective, where you look at improving, and there was a question on that, where you look at improving the lecturer's skills within the teaching environment, like in terms of teaching methodologies, etc. By providing expand equitable access to our institutions. We are utilizing our infrastructure development grants, where we are providing two-way paths, improving the efficiency within our institutions, but also providing access. There was a question with regard to infrastructure, and infrastructure grants can be addressed in two ways. We're looking at the maintenance of our institutions and addressing that, but also looking at providing additional space and allow the growth within our system. I will talk later about the growth. Therefore, we have to create the institutions to provide us with a master plan so that we can understand what are the backlogs, what are the plans moving forward, and looking in the expansion of the system, what are their contributions. Currently, we are spending about $3.2 billion on infrastructure development with their contribution, the policy contribution of $2.3 billion, and the additional from the institutions themselves. We have also the central application system and service. I just wanted to add those two. The system are being developed. The service is providing them an application service to the university and to the students. And there was a question with regard to registration class. We are looking at, and we are, I think, very successful next year to have a standardized application fee of approximately 100 grand. We are in discussion with the ESOP to that to make it more accessible to apply to our institutions at a standardized cost but have the option for many programs to enroll in. With regard to the monitoring of the performance of our 26 universities, we do it through our GEMA system. If you are aware of our GEMA system, it's a dedicated data quality system providing us with fun information that also looking at student space and staff data. We're also regularizing our reports of our institutions through a reporting regulation mechanism, which was revised, where we are requesting now for the first time in the history of university history a GT. And also we are introducing a new reporting process by introducing a biannual reporting to our university. That's up and above the quarterly reports that they have to do with regard to earmark grants. There are two different grants. There's earmark grants and there's a block grant. The block grants are done on annual basis, which we have on for a biannual report, while the earmark grants from clinical, veterinarian, foundation, infrastructure, etc. are reported to the department from a quarterly basis. On the next slide, if we look at the support with regard to the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, we have an oversight function thereof. We acknowledge there are many challenges with regard to the NSFAS. We are proposing to the Minister that we do an audit with regard to the process and procedures of our NSFAS within our institution and our colleges, but we're also thinking about drafting regulations so that we can have a better grip on the NSFAS applications to our students and to the different universities. We also are planning to enhance the support university research capacity. There was a question on that. We are doing it through the research development grant, which is allocated in a differentiated way to our institution. We do not fund each institution in a similar way. There was a question on differentiation. I just want to stand still a little bit on the question of differentiation is that yes, we have drafted a document on that, but we are starting introducing differentiated funding with our universities. And we did our enrollment planning process because the capacity of our universities are not equal in such an extent that for those institutions that do still have space, we provide them with additional funding, infrastructure funding, etc. to grow. But those that do have quality issues within the institution, we say, rather than improve your quality and the same rate of institutions, and therefore the funding for teaching development are then higher than normal standards in the other institutions. With regard to improve the access to universities with our two new universities, University of Milan and Solari University, we have been very much involved in steering the process up until such time that the institutions open the doors. There are inner councils now managing the process, but the department hasn't oversight. So we keep monitoring to ensure that the development of those institutions are on par with the implementation plan and what's there. But I forgot to say, with regard to research capacity, we have a project where we look at the rating of the European we are totally aware that we are underdeveloped in our university, so we are busy compiling a strategy and drafting an implementation plan for the starting of our university to ensure that the growth of enrollment, the expansion of the student body, is on par with the expansion of our existing student system. In previous cycles, it was not. This cycle came on par, so the growth rate of 1.9% of our student body is equal to this 1.9. So our student ratio is remaining the same, but it's still not reaching the black box that we have in the system. And we are looking at to introduce a strategy to create a platform to generate new academics for the system in any which way. The next slide, if we look at the expansion, one of our largest focus, our major focus with the Department of Health is to expand health sciences. So we have promulgated the new health sciences where we're going to incorporate the Limpopo campus of the University of Limpopo. That will be promulgated soon. We are busy with the process. There's a protocol document, protocol engagement document signed up between the two councils of the Department of Health, which is the new university's name, and the University of Limpopo to steer the process, because you have to de-link the Limpopo campus from the University of Limpopo before you can incorporate it legally into a new entity. So we have gone through an extensive process to understand exactly what the challenges around that is, and we are involved in reports on that. Just with regard to the naming of the new university, we have invited comments and suggestions from the public. We have requested the nomination for the interim council membership, and we received around, I think I remember reading about 25 different nominations. And then it became being a ministerial issue, so the minister had to get in consult on an extended basis with the president to understand what is the most appropriate name. So we had to go through that process to define and understand what the name of the university should be. There was a question on teacher colleges. If campuses, we might refer to the campuses because it is the perception in our day seems like it becomes a college and it's not intention. Intention is that those teachers' campuses, which link to our university, are part and parcel of the university's name. Our focus with regards to teacher education is on the vocational education, adult education and foundation-based teachers that we have to produce for the system. There are currently two policy drafted. The one has been approved last year for the FET colleges lecturers, and the one for vocational in foreign education was released for public commenting 2 weeks ago. If you go to the next slide, right, with regard to our target, you will see the university system of plans at a growth rate of about 1.9% that will envisage the target of this of 952,000. And as I have indicated, we have a very dedicated and very intensive planning process with our universities to understand really what the capacity is within our institutions to enable this expansion and also to support them if we request additional, as our DG indicated, like for instance, the NDHB that we request Victoria University, which we then provide additional funding for. But it requires a dedicated process with all the 23 universities in the past cycle. For us to grow our system at 1.9%, we need to provide first-time entry, and we have to give 158,000 first-time entries, which means it is per year 10,000 additional places within our universities. The question was, and I think it was directed from that side, was that how do you fund and how do you ensure that the system are not underfunded? Now, if you understand the funding framework of universities, they do receive the enrollment that the minister approved the targets for the funding thereof. And we plan the system as such. But as we're from teaching English unit plans, the students that are already planned are funded. The question around the unfundedness of the system is when institutions are now in a seat what they are, what the approved target is. And that's trying to manage. How we are proposing to manage it is that we're going to monitor and review the targets and the actual data year on year And they say that in the position of under-enrolling, which means they are overcrowded, will be adjusted by modulo 2-6 if they are under-enrolled by 2-6 and vice versa. So we have to reshape the system constantly, and that will be clearly stated in the enrollment planning statement system and until the release then. So for the first time, indicators of growth of 4.7%. We're also looking and monitoring our African student component, which is a shape of 70% of the total headcount enrollment, which is a tremendous increase from where we were in previous years. In the next slide, we're looking also at the female. We're managing and monitoring our proportion of female enrollment, which is sitting about 37%. The issue around the female is to try and get a strategy and a dedicated process where we can get enrollment of more females within care fields like engineering and NDSB without very well represented, and that's what we're working also towards. The proportion of enrollment in STEM, at the moment it is at 29%, we are improving it, we're suggesting in 2020 that it moves to 30%, and that means we'll have to go to 3.2% growth rate. And remember, science engineering is not a very expensive program, so the infrastructure projects are geared to support the growth in our laboratories, workshops, lecture venues, etc., to support this 3.2% growth. I just want to make another statement, because it was also a question, is that our enrollment planning and our infrastructure plan of how people related, you cannot divorce the two, because the one supports the other one. In previous years, we've done an enrollment planning plan, and we have requested institutions to provide us with an indication of what they will need to get to implement the growth. This time we've turned it around because we are investors of the department already within the system, and the planning project taking 3 to 4 to 5 years to complete to enable the growth. So the focus now is saying of providing you with infrastructure, the space that are going to be provided is so much, and therefore the growth should be at this percentage. With regard to our performance in 2013, we have established the two universities, so the site that is coming now is going to be different. You will see Southside 23, Southside 24, and Southside 25 institutions. So it's at a time frame when the other three institutions came on board. And as I indicated, we have promulgated the new university with opening doors in 2015. Maybe a short note on the new university, the new health sciences. It's a new academic model that we are presenting. And in the report that we have released to the Minister of Health and our Minister of High Education and Training, the model is looking at the comprehensive university. And it's also looking at specializing in health and allied health sciences. But it's a very expensive program, so you have to sustain that institution. So the proposal was done on the international model. We were saying that why not introduce programs like engineering technology or clinical technology, health administration, specializing lawyers in your health sector. So if you give it a different flavor, if I can use that word, to an academic model, yes, it focuses on the health and health sciences, but it provides a broader spectrum of programs to support the health profession. On this slide, with regard to the monitoring report, to use the EMR grant to support the development, it's a new indicator. We are proposing that we're going to have a certain oversight role, but we have to get 3.2 billion that we have introduced to the new universities, and we have to monitor that. We have also five universities that have submitted applications for legal approval to offer qualifications for MBT college lecturers, and this target is basically to improve the quality of our teachers within the MBT colleges. We are doing also through a collaboration of our UFPs and some of our comprehensive universities, because the competency of the education and education and the competency of engineering specifically programs online in our UFPs. And therefore, we are utilizing the competency of skills at our universities to have a mentoring role within our MBT colleges so that our lecturers can come on board. In the next slide, a national college has a special qualification for education in community and adult education and training, while studies, as I've mentioned. We also invested $2.2 billion to our institutions with regards to funding. It is a total of $3.2 billion that the additional contribution is from the university itself. And then also we are going to monitor from now on the infrastructure from, and it is in line with the PICC project for supporting of the president, where we look at all the infrastructure grants which relate to the new university, as well as all the infrastructure projects of our university. To improve the success rate in higher education study, we have teaching development plans. We've changed it. Previously, it was ad hoc, it was not steered. There was no really proper monitoring and reporting on the utilization of the development grants. Now we have a ministerial statement where we have approved criteria for the allocation as well as the implementation of the money, and that is done on a quarterly basis. Also, the same from our foundation provisioning, we are planning to increase the access into our foundation program up until about 35,000 in 2020, but for next year, this year, we start with 60,900. And we also will have monitoring projects to ensure that the foundation programs are implemented in an effective, efficient way. We are planning to increase our exchange rate of our students within the system. You will see this to say that we have not used decimals, but the first one, the estimated performance for 2013 was 76%, this year 76.4%. So we increased the slide of spending so that we and our plan target is 80% in 2020. And never to increase the performance of the percent of our students needs a lot of investment. So we're looking at the increase of success rate to funding within the system. This indicator is also a new indicator. We're looking at the output of our Chancellor's graduates. For the first time, we are disaggregating our Chancellor's. In other words, usually we would say we are supplying the labour market by a certain date of a certain number of Chancellor's engineers. Now we say, but what kind of engineering field are we supplying the labour market for? And we're linking this to the LIM project that Mr. Mattel talked about. Because we are dealing with supply, so we need to understand what the demand is. And a lot of times we'll hear that there's a lot of civil engineers that are unemployed. And we try to get a better balance in the system so that we know exactly how many mechanical engineers, civil engineers, electrical engineers, etc., etc. are being produced. And even from the health sector, how many psychologists, how many MTHD students, how many nurses, etc., etc. And for the first time, that will become transparent data, which everybody, all the institutions will realize what is their contribution to the development of the state skills system. Institutional objective 3, monitoring good governance and management in the public higher education system. We are proposing to develop a set of financial, key financial indicators. And there was a discussion, a question with regard to I think we're going to get the well-functioning higher education institutions, if it's incentive funds. We have started with a process to monitor the financial health of our institutions. Yes, we have well-functioning institutions, but even in a financial healthy institutions, they are pockets of challenges. And two of the areas that we do find is your student accommodation is not being run by deficits, as well as your student debt. And it happens in pockets within our institutions. As soon as we can have these key financial indicators and say from a global view, if an institution is healthy, then we're going to utilize that to report to the minister and see the minister and advise the minister with regard to the financial health. With private higher education, we are proposing to draft a revised regulation for private higher education. There are our partners in the expansion of the system, but we have to really consider the legal provisioning as there are some challenges in our private higher education institutions as well. And also the data from the private higher education institutions also need to be improved. We don't have a system like it has with the public universities, so looking at incorporating their data into the total head system of the department, we will have a better understanding of what the contributions of our public, of our private higher education institutions are. In the next class, to develop and enhance research capacities and project strategy of universities, we are planning for this year as a cumulative target of 48,100 postgraduates in the system.
of which 1,930 will be doctorate graduates. A doctorate graduate forms part of our research outreach. So we will have to measure, and we are proposing to improve our policy on the measurement of research outreach for universities, so that we can understand where are the areas to increase research outreach. And if you understand research outreach, you have mock doctors, your doctorate doctors, and the doctorate graduates, and then your publication unions as well. Second last slide, the annual report research outreach is also a new indicator. Usually we will have to have an analysis and we will provide an indication in the spreadsheet. Now we're really going to provide a dedicated report to the minister and publish it and stand as a collective report with regard to the economy, the production of new knowledge and our innovation system. We also have a project with DHC to look at emerging researchers, black researchers, which are different areas where we can collectively promote the improvement of research within the system, and also research development plan, which I think is a differentiated approach. The last question on the last line of the university program is that we have a yearly system where we have a dedicated submission of audited data from external auditors, one for students, one for staff, and then one annual debt update for our whole holdings plan. I just want to, I think I had really suggested the last question that I haven't addressed was the one agricultural question. We are busy in the process establishing a balance team to between ourselves and the bottom of agriculture, forestry, fisheries to understand how we can do the transitional arrangements with regard to agricultural colleges. Also, what the model of transfer? Is it a higher competency within the university? Should be in the university? Should be a higher education college as provided by the Act? Or should it be into an HD college? And where does the main fall? And we, out of that report, we will be more clear to understand what is the function shift that needs to take place and where it should take place. Thank you.
Thank you for the presentation. I'm now going to invite members to engage in this presentation. Honourable Professor,
thank you very much for that. Just a few questions. I've got a lot of questions, but I'm only going to give you about four. The first one is all the wonderful funding that you gave the university for infrastructure linked to enrollment planning. I seem to remember a bit that this was an enormous problem because you require matching funding, and many universities used up all their reserves by providing the matching funding. It was impossible to raise, and in fact ended up costing universities a lot of money and providing serious damage to their savings. So that is a problem. There's another problem with your enrollment plan funding, which is that it's not all about space. A lot of it is about class size and quality. And if you only increase your enrollment and end up with classes of 500 students, it really doesn't help. And at the same time, we're trying to improve pass rates. Those classes of 500 students are not going to provide the kind of education you need in order to pass. The second point is, and I think it's related, is that your SET targets, it's clear that you're not meeting them. You know, on the one hand, I think we heard in another meeting that this was because universities were their own bosses, and therefore they couldn't kind of manage to improve their SET output. But in fact, it's linked to the question of the total failure, I think, by the department to get the point that you need more staff in order for all of these things to be achieved. And in order to get more staff, you need a bigger budget. And that has just not been happening in proportion to the increase. The other point is that in your new target, you seem to be neglecting research intensive universities. A lot of your targets, new and old, are about forming disadvantaged universities and comprehensive universities and disadvantaged students and foundation courses and many other things. You do mention research outputs near the end, But what we have is a group of 30 tenth universities, which are not robust as you might think they are. And my suggestion would be that some targets be found for measuring ongoing excellence in those universities, and I don't think your output system does that. My last point is supply and demand, and all your wonderful ideas about measuring demand. But it takes up to 6 years to produce an engineer. So by the time you produce the engineer, the need for whom you've measured 6 years previously, the economy has changed and you no longer need that kind of engineer. And then you get a surplus being produced. So it's not as easy a thing as just getting information from industry as to what they need in a particular year. 6 years later, when the student is produced, they may not need that skill anymore. So just to ask you whether you have considered that. Thank you.
I have recognized Ms. Killian and Mr. Ketana and Mr. Chishonga and Mr. Mas. Professor, you did the last one. Ms. Killian, thank you, Chairperson.
I think I do not have any queries about the what that you intend to achieve. But I am a little concerned about the how. And that relates to capacity with a very limited budget. And I would like to understand how big the department is, how many people we have to do all this monitoring. Because I have heard what Professor Zaria said about the research and how some of the institutions are actually now sacrificing the research outputs because of the outrageous on them. But I would like to know if there is any measurement of the relevance of some of the research that is conducted for a developing country where we are situated in a changing world, etc. But with bearing in mind what our natural resources are and how we need to have the right sort of skills pool for South Africans to be relevant in the world. Now, I think that is not true, but I just want to ask you to what extent how responsive the department would be to do exactly what Professor said, to be quick on changing, on the changing world environment in which we have to provision our graduates. The other outstanding matter that I do believe we need clarity about is to what extent will we be in a position to provide, you have indicated that the grants say there would be a system to provide different levels of support for different institutions. How would you incentivize those grants for universities to achieve the outcomes that the department really wants to achieve? And is it easy to monitor that? Because you know, if you want the response back from the institutions, will they not twist the report in such a way that it would benefit them financially, but that in the end you have a difficulty? We believe one of the problems, and we've only had a presentation this morning, so you must forgive us if our information is not cross-referenced, but one of the problems that we are facing is that first-grade students very often come from other countries, and they go back. They do not utilize their postgraduate qualification for input in South Africa and South African economy. Is there not a way, and in the meantime, they benefit from the subsidies of government. How are we going to change that, that there should be a differentiated system, how unpopular it may be, so that we actually have additional funds for South African students and the sort of the lost generation that the minister was referring to? How do we make sure that we redirect our funding to make it possible for our own South African students to have the benefits? If we could have your response to that.
Thank you.
The just in addition to what Professor Tozulu was saying about engineering, I thought the basic engineering qualifications, I mean, it is to be engineering, engineers in lots of work are going to be surprised because we're so deep on this project, for example, so I mean that because of the backlog of funding, of about the list of people, of about one where something is doing, that are waiting for our facilities, so that they are pushing to build houses for the next 10 years or up to 50 years. So that should be made of that block. So when it comes to that protection, you know, civil engineers who must put tap water, pulp, draw people with water, because houses have committed to try to take mother clean water, tap water, the mother sewer system in allowance, the sanitation facilities and electricity. You show that those civil engineers are going to need for that infrastructure for the next 30 to 50 years. I would imagine that applies to mining engineers because as long as mining is the key sector of our economy and we discover the new prospects, you're going to need those mining engineers. But the other thing is, I know we've got that. The digital cancer demanded they upgrade every year, they attend courses to upgrade themselves, to update themselves. Otherwise, they lose their certificate. And that's why I said to check in addition to what professors ask, whether this has been applied to engineering. That's so that we understand this gets skills, and when we debate, we know what we're talking about. The one point for me that I wanted, question that I wanted to ask is about distance learning. I've heard some of the colleagues saying overseas universities can send the overseas teachers, they help us somewhere in the suburb. Do we really have to know what percentage are you able to calculate as a number of people that they are absorbing, students that they are treating or absorbing in our educational system, whether from Europe, London or America. I'm not even sure if this is true, but I know some of my colleagues told me they are training with those type of overseas universities. You send assignments and there's a campus somewhere, but the main campus is overseas.
Another thing, I just want to provide one suggestion to the department, given its experiences for the past 4 years in the engagement of the curators or the administrators of the troubled universities and universities of technologies. You need to regulate the say of your appointed administrators, for instance, the duration, and need to make sure that the duration is served with achievables so as to enable the university to move forward. Because the university cannot be arrested by the situation where the curator of a stay is served for itself and it just keeps digging. And also, I think maybe the question I need to understand from the officials of the department who pays for the stay and the salaries of these administrators. Is it the department or the university corporate? Because in some instances the university could be really troubled and maybe adding on another senior executive on a freelance basis or use their own terms in terms of what is payable could also bring another catastrophic situation. Secondly, you need to prescribe a percentage of budget to universities that could be allowable to the consultants. There is a new law by the universities allowed to use consultants, even in instances where they can source the professionals In fact, in some instances, that has even brought the team down. And when we shut this new era law for consultants, we discover that it is the law of the old order type of technicians and professionals. It is not the new era type of ideal professionals, which means your value system as a department vis-a-vis where you want to take the company forward will later tell you that as soon as you prefer old professionals, it means that you are saying you are not in the room to work with these universities to present what I would call the new era case in higher education. You have to preserve your destination. In as much as those people serve and just let it be everywhere, but you need to create a new era of people who will be able to bring new ideas, access your vision in the higher education. Lastly, I'm interested in the infrastructure grant. One of the universities where I serve benefited a lot from this. But the honorable member here from the TA professor indicated the need to maybe lessen the contributions of, in particular, your former or still historically black institutions. But at some point, if we, from the side of the University of Technology, where it is, if we did not have enough money on our reserve, we were never going to be able to accept and implement those developments. It's a very encouraging source of funding, but it comes with a heightened responsibility on the universities who are already indebted on various ways. I also, the last question, Honorable Chair, and thank you very much for allowing me to give up this. I feel honored for this as a small party. We need to establish the extent to which the universities can really say they have achieved what they need to achieve. In most cases, halfway through the journey, we tend to have universities just picking what it is that they want to do. At some point, the branch of the higher education needs to strategically redirect a group of universities to a specific journey. Some universities still have cut land on what they want to do. I know it can take 10 years, it can take 20 years, but at some point the country has to be driven. It must not be a determination of the universities alone and all along alone on the direction of the country's future education needs.
Thank you for your intervention, and the next is the Prof. Not you, the last one. I remember. I have recognized that you showed that.
Thank you, Chair. The honourable members. I'm referring to the access to university education with special reference to universities which are going to be opened, one in Malanda and the other one in Northern Cape. And my experience is that I'm from the Benda area. Immediately after the university is opened, the number of graduates will definitely increase. But is there any plan, especially of encouraging these people who will be produced by this university to think seriously about self-employment? Because we still find a person with LLB still looking for a job. G-com still looking for a job. And we need a mindset change today. Secondly, Are we also considering what I will call holistic approach? Here I'm thinking here of we always say healthy body, healthy mind, and healthy spirit. But usually you find that these things are not integrated. You find the sportsman concentrating on the body side, forgetting about the other aspects. How are we coordinating these other people? I mean, a human being is a combination of these, spirit, body, and mind. Lastly, we have a problem. Maybe it's linked to the Department of Health. How are we taking wellness seriously? I'm sure with regards to all these, South Africa is becoming the West. And is there any way education can influence to curb these trends? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think I will have some what other members have had on the basic fundamental functions of the university are to do research, teach, and also do consensus. Both are fundamental. The creation of knowledge, processing of knowledge, implementation of your knowledge for learning. Because at the end of the day, universities must begin to say, how are we going to reach information building? The strategic goals of our government. I think there should be a meeting, and the Department of Mahavish must come in and show the university our monitors with regard to their research. Where they contribute to nation building. Also, I think also university must also help students. Every particular framework, students should be able to produce a paper that will contribute to nation building. Research that will contribute to nation building. Which is very important. How are you going to do that? And therefore, from here, with one of them, I also say, we need a kind of, we need to be redirected in this question. Why would the university that opens on the 1980 is failing to work with commons? Within its own industry. Why would it fail to offer short business courses from time to time to assist the communities around the university? Why would the university offer, say, a BCom degree and an honors degree in any university and fail to offer an MBA degree? The university opened doors in the system and it's a very heavy and nothing is happening after the student cannot be able to look for other universities to pursue their studies. These are part of the anomalies within the university. I think the department can be able to chip in and assist and ensure that the university are the right economy to do their task. And finally, what I would share is the gap with regards to salary. A tutor, two lecturer, senior lecturer, compared to a professor, senior professor, or a graduate dean, or rector, or principal, there is a huge gap. You find that the lecturer, every lecturer, and the principal is so huge. A principal might get in 1.7 million, 1.7 million, or something. At one instance, we had a principal who had paid close to 2 million, or more. Whatever the lecturer would be getting about 10,000 rand a month, what a gap. A person who's ready to do the work, teaching the student on a daily basis. I think the department has got to look into that. Because it is usually a terrain that we want to check on. Thank you. Hello, Mr. President.
Last question will come from me on slide number 30. This is from Sudden. I just
want to find out from you if, from where we are sitting, we now have 26 annual performance plans for the 26 universities. And by next, okay, I was just taking questions on your slide number 35, where in 2013 you have identified and supported to develop about, okay, 10 universities to develop editing colleges, college lecturers, sorry. But then in 2014, then you reduced that by 5. What is the challenge? Because, I mean, here we want to increase the access, and now, which means we must really accelerate on the training of the lecturers for equities. Alright, and then on slide number 6, almost the last slide. A monitor report on the effective use of infrastructure grants by each university, and show about 23 universities here, that we produce that are approved by the Director General. In 31st of March 2015, I was thinking that maybe for monitoring purposes, should we have a preliminary monitoring progress report on a 6-month basis, so it will assist you to achieve your target by the end of the financial year. Okay. See here, you're targeting the end of the financial year. Now, on slide number 7, have we achieved the 24 university teaching development plan for each university to produce and approved by the director general by June 2014, we now in July. It's going to know because I think this will then appear in the quarter report. But the state of engagement now, I'm sure we can respond to that for us. And then the last one will be. Alright. Does the department have a policy on internationalization to regulate enrollment of foreign students and non-South African working in South African universities? Then the last one would be, what is the future of the National Institute for Higher Education in Mpumalanga and Northern Cape?
No, thank you very much, Chair. I'll take some few last questions. Then my colleagues will come in. Professor Bozuli, the honorable member, clear cash from the institution, the kind of questions that he because they have to do with the contemporary challenges in the system. But what I want to indicate is that a university is a juristic test which is governed through a council. And it has been designated through legislation as autonomous. Now, in that process, then, a university gets its funding from government, which government does, in a variety of ways. But also a university has got the leeway and the right to source funds from a variety of sources. We call it and some institutions who have huge reserve funds. Now, as government informed by some of the basic principles of economics, that one at any given time will be unlimited. What is limited? The only economic resources. Now, when we are putting up this far, we also engage institutions in relation to what could be the amount of resources from other sources that they could contribute. And in that process, they will come and pledge match funding as we are indicating. And welcome that, because we don't think money in these reserves are there for decoration. If we are investing them in infrastructure, in develop the human resource capacity of the country, we believe it's a good investment. And we get into that engagement and partnerships with universities quite very much heavily, and we encourage universities to come to the party for us to be able to address one, the backlog, as well as the current needs of the student. That is in relation to this question of funding of the infrastructure. Now, on foreign students, government does not subsidize foreign students. The students who are subsidized through protocol agreement are the ones who are in the country. So once to say that on record that government is not funding foreign students except those who are in fact who are then accommodated on the basis of the protocol which is in there. Regulating the state of administrator, not to let the state. An administrator cannot stay in an institution for a period of more than 2 years. But I think the point I wanted to emphasize is that at a point when the administrator is getting into an institution, it's when that institution has actually paid his money to discharge its responsibilities insofar as provision of quality program, management of financial resources, and also holding principles of full corporate governance in their entirety. Now, an administrator goes there to mob up a city, and any mob up has never been an easy task. But what we normally get, when these institutions are messed up, and an administrator comes in, it would be as if the administrator walked into a normal situation, which is not the case. In the first instance, though we entrusted the responsibility of having and managing this institution, they destroyed it. And the administrator comes in within 2 years, maybe 2 years or so years in destroying the institution. And that administrator will come either for a year or 2 years turn the institution around and pathway, which is a huge challenge. The payment of the administrator is from the budget of a university, of the institution. There is no extra money elsewhere. Paid through a normal budget processes of the institution. Prescribing the percentage of budget for consultants, that's a decision that council should make. It's the council and the management of the institution. So the legislation is providing the framework and the institution are autonomous. You don't let the council room to afford to do what. The legislation has actually prescribed that responsibility to council themselves. So, appointment of consultants is a matter that institutions should in themselves assess. Through their own processes. The nation building. Now, institutions develop their you have at a department into what kind of a graduate should emerge out of our institution. And in this process of planning, all those issues are engaged. But over and above that, realizing that there is a sense of losing some of the important aspects of us as a nation. What the Minister has done is he initiated the establishment of National Institute for Social Sciences, which is located within our institution, with the view of trying to incorporate some perspective that will assist us into advancing the notion of nation building in the country. It's aimed at already actually doing that. The other is of reference. This much as the Minister has put it to the attention of the chair of council. But the remuneration and the conditions of service at the university are determined by the council themselves. So it's a matter that I think the portfolio committee has to address with the councils of the various universities. And it's incumbent upon the honorable member to undertake that responsibility and that engagement. The minister, I think, is doing his part, and the often time and again, when he's raising this issue, is often accused of interference in the institution. But the matter that is actually coming to drive home. My colleague will take up some of the questions.
Thank you very much, Fiji. The whole issue of infrastructure enrollment funding is to remember the infrastructure intention is not to only to expand and access, it's also looking at efficiency. But that is a determinant from the university labor university education to what extent is the backup with elements basing past enrollment patterns where there was no additional space made available, therefore the graduate output cannot be delivered because of space constraints. And that kind of funding is looking at the efficiency of your teaching, providing for work settings, for instance, where you can accommodate the backup of students to eliminate the overcrowding. So it's not only for over for assets only. With regard to the engineering or the stakeholders, and I think I want to take us back to the previous enrollment cycle where we were given a target from an analysis done by Krista and Pisa and the presidency where they gave us those targets. And we had no insight or a need to adjust those targets. And we knew they were over-exaggerated and we will not achieve them. But we had to do our planning, and for instance, it was provided that we produced 30,000 engineers. We said only 9,000. And actually, we achieved those 9,000 that we could, but we had to do a plan to try to find a way where we can produce more engineers. So the kind of process that we had gone into is to work out with ECSA and with your CIRA. And we had a whole work of understanding exactly what the blockages is with regard to the production of engineers. Yes, part of the resources. Secondly, your infrastructure. Thirdly, your workplaces within your workplace, specifically your technologists and technicians. And more over to that is your candidacy phase of your professional engineers where they still don't find work placement. So we already have got joint